Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
They called us deplorables. We're not gonna take it. They shut down our country.
No, we ain't gonna take it.
They say our thoughts are disinformation.
Oh, we're not gonna take it anymore.
We will not go quietly into the night.
You tell them I'm coming.
We will not vanish without a fight.
And hell's coming with me, you hear?
Today,
hell's coming with me.
We celebrate our Independence Day.
This is our response, The Rob Carson Show.
It is Rob Carson Show, Monday edition. Did you have a wonderful weekend with your family? I hope you did. I don't know where you live, but where I live in the middle of the Midwest, the breadbasket of America, it's starting to feel like fall. And you know what? I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. I'm ready for this election. I'm ready for the apple cart to be upset. And I'll just say right now, here's what you need to focus on. These four letters, EOTP, eyes on the prize, EOTP, eyes on the prize. You're going to get distracted. You're going to get bummed out. You're going to get told that, Donald Trump is going to be arrested imminently because he's so evil, even though they've been going after him for 6 years and nothing has happened. Nothing has happened, just two failed impeachment attempts, one attempted stolen election, then one successful stolen election with the help of the FBI in 2020. But you know what? The truth wins, and good wins. And if it didn't, then Hitler's nephew would be the chancellor of Nazi Germany in 2022. But he ain't, is he? So there you go. 9/11 happened on a weekend. 9/11 happened yesterday, and I didn't post a lot on it yesterday on social media just because I wanted you to think of the day on your own terms, how it affected you, how it affected me, how it affected others. For my generation, Generation X, it essentially was, and for all generations, don't get me wrong, but my generation was in their 20s and 30s. I was in my early 30s, new father, when 9/11 happened. So it was our Pearl Harbor to some degree. And we can't take our eyes off that prize either. We cannot forget that there are people who still want us dead. They still want our real estate. They still want your family dead. And when you see things like this headline yesterday, Taliban now controls more territory in Afghanistan today than they did before 9/11. And it's true. It's true. 2001, 20 years ago, Taliban had less territory in Afghanistan than they do in 2021. And this time they have $85 billion in our equipment. And they are talking about the Taliban rising, by the way. And would that surprise anybody? And Joe Biden pulled our troops out unceremoniously. Never before, not in Lebanon. Forces just cut and run. We left behind hundreds of U.S. citizens, tens of thousands of Afghan allies, and we left a whole lot of military equipment. That's an indignity. That's one of those indignities that have been suffered upon us. The Department of Homeland Security Inspector General has issued a bombshell report that accuses Joe Biden's administration of resettling Afghan nationals who were not fully vetted across the United States. Following the U.S. Armed Forces withdrawal from Afghanistan in August of 2021, Biden opened a humanitarian parole pipeline that has resettled more than 86,000 Afghans in American communities, many of whom were not screened or interviewed in person. The report states that we determined some information used to vet evacuees through the U.S. government databases, such as name, date of birth, identification number, and travel document data, was inaccurate, incomplete, or missing. As a result, DHS may have admitted or paroled individuals into the United States who pose a risk to national security and the safety of local communities. According to the DHS, IG investigators, Biden's DHS did not always have a critical data to properly screen, vet, or inspect Afghan evacuees arriving in part of the massive Afghan resettlement operation. Now, for those of you my son's age, who's 22, 21 years ago is a lifetime ago. For me, it was about half of a lifetime, a little bit more than a half a lifetime ago. And I'm never going to forget it, and I never will. I'll never forget what it meant. I remember when my son was 18 months old after 9/11, and we used to watch the news in the kitchen. We had a little TV in the kitchen, and I watched nonstop the footage of 9/11, obviously. And my son, one night at 18 months old, walked into our master bedroom crying, and he said, "The building fall down, Dad, the building fall down." He was 18 months old. I'll never forget it. I know you won't ever forget it. Washington, D.C., at least the Democrat side of the political equation, seems to have forgotten it. And are even equating January 6th protesters who were led into the Capitol building after being infiltrated by 14 left-leaning groups, according to Newsweek. They're equating that on top of the narrative that Joe Biden espoused 2 weeks ago that Donald Trump supporters are fascists. So they're using one of the most sacred possible tragedies in American history as a cudgel against their present opponents, which is it's disgusting, it's sickening, and it's nonsense, it's falderal. And they're going to get their arses kicked in November. We're not going to forget it. Yesterday I was watching NFL football for the first time, unencumbered by kneeling players, people complaining about the national anthem, and I saw players arms embraced, and I saw a couple of versions of the national anthem, but for the first time in a while I really listened to the national anthem. Now, we have friends over normally. I insist, if we're watching football, everybody shut up during the national anthem. And we don't have a lot of friends here, unfortunately, so I watched the game by myself. But the national anthem, for the first time in a while, I shed a tear yesterday. Did you? I saw one. I'm not sure if this was before the Kansas City game, but this baritone came on and he sang, and he just blew the roof off the stadium. And then yesterday, the Jets versus the Ravens, the microphone kind of cut out. I want you to listen to this, because you know what? On 9/11, I also heard another story. Over 70% of both sides of the equation, I heard it reinstated. I've been talking about it a couple weeks. Over 70% of both sides of the political equation believe the country is going in the wrong direction. And the reason being is because there's a man in the White House that the American people realize is a charlatan, is mentally addled, and his policies and the madness surrounding the leftist class of the 1968. All of the things that are going on in American schools with CRT, with everybody's a racist and all this nonsense and all this transgender nonsense, people realize the country is going off the rails, and we love our country. We don't hate it, like academia has been saying and still are trying to say, but I think we're kind of moved on. Now we're ready to go to battle on the 8th of November and take it back. But I want to play a little bit of the anthem yesterday at the Jets and Ravens game.
Present. Oh. Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we
hail.
Really, 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 really cool. And I don't think it was just because of 9/11. I think it was people are just tired of the abuses and usurpations. It was never a bad thing to not... The national anthem, standing for the national anthem, weeping during the national anthem was never a bad thing. It never was. Some people tried to make it that way, but you just kind of weathered the storm, and now we're back. We're back. I felt really good. Just felt really good yesterday. I was watching football. The air was crisper. It was 59 degrees when I went out yesterday morning. It just felt good. It felt like maybe the heat of the summer, maybe the heat of the last couple of years, we could sweep that behind us to some degree. But we still have a lot of fighting. EOTP, man, eyes on the prize. Got to keep the eyes on the prize. And so... Today on the show, I'm going to talk a little bit about a couple of Democrats hijacking the memory of 9/11 and those lost and turning it against political opponents, which honestly, every day, regardless of what they say, I'm going to come in optimistic. I'm going to come in feeling good about the country, the direction of the country. I know we're going to turn it around. We have to. We have to. One other note on 9/11. Last night, for the very first time in a very long time, I watched CBS TV. And I was talking to this my wife because, you know, NBC's getting ready to cut their, after late night, they're getting rid of regular programming because nobody's watching it. And I decided after the football game, after the Chiefs just clocked, just won yesterday, gigantically yesterday over the Cardinals, not a big surprise. But I noticed that that CBS was doing this thing on 9/11, and it reignited my intense interest in it, obviously. But this is about the fire department in New York City. I thought it was amazing. The fire department in New York City, 700 officers responded to the attacks on the Twin Towers, and 350 didn't survive. And the amazing thing that many of you may not know is that they had this sort of lottery to decide who was going to go into the towers to rescue people. And those who were chosen to go in the towers knew they were going to die. 350 men went into the towers to rescue people, knowing full well there was a really, really good chance they were going to die. And they went in, and they did. And the amazing thing, what those men did in their final steps on Earth, their final breaths on Earth, they rescued 98% of the people below where the jets hit. They rescued 98% of the people below where the jets hit because there was no saving the people above that. EOTP, eyes on the prize. Eyes on the prize. 800-922-6680, Monday edition of the Rob Carson Show. Back in a few.
SS Bitenic set sail on January 20th, 2021. Now she's taking on water in a big way. It's the Rob Carson Show.
It is Rob Carson Show. We've got plenty of audio coming up from Hillary Clinton talking about 9/11 and saying that Trump supporters are as bad as the 9/11 hijackers. You know, and you could say that stuff. You could shoot her mouth off and everything. Nobody believes that nonsense except for, you know, MSNBC and CNN, I guess. But, you know, 9/11, of course, the 21st anniversary yesterday. I was thinking about this. You know, my generation, Generation X, this was our Pearl Harbor, effectively. It really was, because we were of a fighting age when 9/11 happened, and we did. And it's so interesting to me because I'll see these hats, and it's strange for me as a guy in his mid-50s to see guys in their mid-50s and 40s wearing hats saying Desert Storm veteran. And, you know, isn't that wild? It's kind of crazy, but we did it. We stepped up. The country stepped up, and we will never forget. I decided this weekend that I was going to hijack a theme, an anthem of the class of 1968. There was a TV commercial around. It was like a Rebellion Rock or something that they used to sell on television. And I decided to take this song and kind of plug in some new lyrics for what life is like in America in 2022, for what it's worth, if you will. This is Jim Gossett, by the way.
There's something happening here. Got a dress with a brain that's not clear.
Yeah, a little cloudy there. Yeah.
He's got floods where there used to be hair. Shaking hands when nobody's there. Think it's time to stop. Hey, what's that sound? Biden's Democrats are going down.
November the 8th, eyes on the prize.
The left is in disarray. November 8th should be a big day. We could win big, but we must beware. Voter fraud will occur everywhere. Time to stop. Hey, what's that sound? Five Democrats are going down.
Freedom Rock. That's the name. It was Freedom Rock.
FBI as corrupt as they come. How do I know? Cause I'm not dumb.
I'm not stupid.
We must make them pay. They weaponize the DOJ. Time to stop. Hey, what's that sound? Debs are being run in the ground. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Their policies will be unwound. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Run them out of D.C. town.
We will see November the 8th is coming up. So make sure to vote in person. If you're going to vote early, vote in person. If you're going to vote on the day of, vote in person. Do it. And remember, your cell phone, this little marvelous device, I know it's kind of hard to believe that thing. It's called a smartphone. It has a phone feature. Maybe you haven't used it in a while. It's a supercomputer. But it also is a marvelous tool for journalism. So if you see anything weird, like people stuffing ballot boxes, take some video. Will ya? Well, here's Hillary Clinton yesterday talking about 9/11 and using her typical kind of, she's an elite, using her typical passive-aggressive fashion to not really kind of look beyond memorializing all the death that happened that day and paint Republicans in the same fashion as the 9/11 terrorists.
What's going through your mind today, 21 years later?
Well, Dana, every time we approach September 11th, I do think about everything that I saw, all the people that I met, the families of those who lost loved ones. So it is indelibly part of my memories, and I feel grateful that we were able to come together as a country at that really terrible time.
Now here she goes. She's going to turn this thing around. They're going to twist up some words and make the current supporters of Donald Trump into the enemy.
We put aside differences. I wish we could find ways of doing that again. We rebuilt.
You know, like for the 4 years that you screamed that the election had been stolen.
New York. We have done our best.
Yeah, you rebuilt New York, and then de Blasio destroyed it, and it's still now a hellhole, and the new mayor's not doing much better.
Take care of the families that lost so much on that terrible day. And we have also, I think, been reminded.
Here we go.
About how important it is to try to deal with extremism of any
kind. Here we go. This is the money shot.
Especially when it uses violence to try to achieve political and ideological goals.
Now, again, she is talking about, and what they've been trying to do the last couple of weeks is say that January the 6th, as they've been saying, and from the very beginning, I said that January 6th was nonsense as far as the hundreds of millions of dollars in damage and the you know, violent overthrow of the government. That never happened. That was nonsense. People were led into the building. That will be investigated. It will come out in the wash. But here she is. She's attempting to say that it was as bad as 9/11, and nothing could be further from the truth, because nobody is signing up, by the way, to fight MAGA Republicans like they did versus the Taliban.
So I'm one who thinks that there are lessons still to be learned from what happened to us on 9/11
oh,
that we should be very aware of during this time in our country and the world's history.
Here is Senator
you
Mark.
Mentioned
Oops, sorry. Hold on 1 second. We'll be fine. This is Mark Warner. He's a senator from Virginia, and he seems like a really nice guy. I met him a few years ago. We worked at a charitable fundraiser, and I was dealing blackjack, and he was there. Seems like a really nice person, you know, and almost disarming. Well, he said things that even worse than that about January 6th protesters. I'll play some of the audio on that. Also, Joe Biden is cancer moonshot. He's paring that down. He said he was going to cure cancer in his administration. Now he's saying, no, we're not going to be able to do that, but I'll tell you what, we're gonna slash the number of cancer deaths in half within 25 years, which private industry has already done the last 25 years. Thought you should know. They'll continue to do it without the government, but Joe Biden's gonna try and own cancer. Anyway, that's coming up. Here's the number if you want to call in, 800-922-6680. This is the Rob Carson Show. Hey, it's Rob Carson for Stamps.com. The holiday season has a way of sneaking up on us. If you're a small business owner, you know how important it is to be ready for the insane holiday season. And if you haven't started preparing for the chaos of holiday mailing and shipping, you're already falling behind. Luckily, Stamps.com has everything you need to make your whole life a whole lot easier. It's the 24/7 post office that you can access from anywhere. No lines, no traffic, no hassle. Stamps.com is your one-stop shop for all your shipping and mailing needs. For over 20 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. Get access to the USPS and UPS services you need to run your business right from your computer. With inflation on the rise, every dollar counts. Protect your margins with major discounts on USPS and UPS rates. Up to 86% off. So get ahead of the holiday chaos this year. Get started with Stamps.com today. Sign up with the promo code Newsmax for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the page and enter code Newsmax. That's Stamps.com. Enter code Newsmax. It's a Monday edition of the Rob Carson Show after 9/11, and I just brought this up today because I wanted to make some observations about 9/11 and how, of course, we can never forget and how it was my generation's Generation X, the last analog generation, who kind of just, we essentially went to college, we got out of college, we had kids, we went through the day-to-day life of life, and now some of us are, in our 40s and 50s, and 9/11 was our Pearl Harbor. 9/11 was what caused our generation to sign up. 9/11 was what caused Pat Tillman to sign up. Being a player for the Cardinals yesterday, I saw during the game they have a statue for Pat Tillman outside of the stadium because he signed up for service because he realized that the country was in danger. Whether or not that would happen today, I don't know. I don't know if millennials would do it or not. I'm really not sure. I'm not sure if Gen Z would do it right now if we had another 9/11. But one thing that is happening is that Democrats are trying to make it seem like there are people in our country who are the political opposition of the Democrat Party, that we are as bad as those people. And that, to me, is really thoroughly sickening, to be quite honest. I had a friend, his name's Jerry, and he was a TV anchor. And when 9/11 happened, he was about my age, mid-30s at the time. And he, despite being in his mid-30s, he signed up for the military. I think he was, when he did sign up, he was 38 or so, and he became a medic. And he went over and he served tours in Afghanistan. He was a medic, and he ended up having a brain injury, a concussive brain injury, meaning that an explosion went off near him. I have another friend named Brian who was a National Guard trooper, and he was a cabbie when I met him in Minneapolis in the 90s, and he was in the National Guard. He had the same thing, concussive brain injury. My friend Jerry doesn't remember anything about the early days of our friendship. He does know me as his good friend, but he did. He signed up and he became a medic. And that was that was Generation X. That was the generation that the last generation that that saw the threat to the United States and signed up for it like they did in World War II. Nothing against boomers and nothing against those who signed up for the Vietnam War or were drafted into the Vietnam War. I don't want to take away anything away from them because they served as valiantly as anyone. The left just choose to demonize them. This is Senator Mark Warner yesterday talking about September the 11th and the Democrats using this sacred day to demonize Republicans.
And our country came together. In many ways, we defeated the terrorists because of the...
He's gonna passively say, oh, yeah, we all came together. But now things are different because of those evil Republicans.
Resilience of the American public because of our intelligence community. And we are safer, better prepared.
Are we really? I don't think so. Because, you see, we just pulled out of Afghanistan, and Joe Biden let dozens and dozens of very dangerous people into the country without vetting them from Afghanistan. And then the southern border there, Marky Mark.
The stunning thing to me is here we are 20 years later, and the attack on the symbol of our democracy was not...
Here we go. This is just amazing, isn't it?
...coming from terrorists, but it came from literally... insurgents attacking the Capitol on January 6th.
Yeah, the FBI even said it wasn't an insurgency.
So I believe we are stronger. I believe our intelligence community has performed remarkably. I think the threat...
When they're going after Trump officials.
...terror has diminished. I think we still have new challenges.
Do you feel like the threat of terror has diminished?
...in terms of nation, state challenges, Russia, and longer term, a technology competition with China. But I do worry about... some of the activity in this country were the election deniers, the insurgency that took place on January 6th.
There you go. Okay, so, you know, we're kind of getting the picture here, right? The election deniers, the January 6th. It's the same thing that Joe Biden espoused a couple weeks ago, which did a faceplant, by the way. Most Americans don't believe that nonsense with regard to what he said about Republicans being fascists and all that. Yeah, it did a faceplant, but they're still doing it. Here is, this is Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris on the 9/11. 11 hijackers versus those who went to the Capitol on January the 6th.
Look, we're at the 21st marking, if you will, of the September 11th attacks.
Yeah.
This was a foreign terrorist attacking our democracy,
yeah.
Attacking this country.
Yeah.
We're now, as a nation, battling a threat from within. Is the threat...
Are we really battling a threat from within, Chuck? Tell me exactly what threat we're battling from within. Other than, I don't know, teaching kids that they're racist in school and need to be another gender.
Equal or greater than what we faced after 9/11?
That's an interesting question. I have held many elected offices as district attorney, attorney general, senator, now vice president.
None of them earned.
And there's an oath that we always take.
Yes.
Which is to defend and uphold our Constitution against...
When we're not whizzing on it.
...all enemies, foreign and domestic. We don't compare the two in the oath, but we know they both can exist, and we must defend against it.
There you go. unbelievable. Oh, and this is, by the way, this is something you may have heard a few months ago. This is MSNBC actually saying that the rally at the Capitol was not caused by Donald Trump.
Just the key point that, yes, there was a pro-Trump rally at which the president spoke, and we can absolutely talk about all the things the president said there. But the idea that that rally is the thing that got out of hand and that somehow resulted in the breaching of the Capitol, that rally was very far from the Capitol.
Yep.
And the people who, as you say, did the initial... breach that allowed everybody else to come in, they never even went to that rally.
Well, there you go. That's MSNBC admitting that January the 6th was an inside job, essentially. Let's go to Steve in Baltimore. He was a firefighter in Baltimore on 9/11. Steve, welcome to the Rob Carson Show. Hello, my friend.
Hi, pal. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate that.
You bet.
Pardon me. On September 11th, 2001, I was a 27-year veteran of the City Fire, Baltimore City Fire Department. I was a captain. And I thought I had seen everything, but that day literally changed my life. I'm wearing a T-shirt right now with the names of 343 New York City firefighters that died that day. And the reason I'm calling, I'm not criticizing you because I don't doubt that you heard what you heard.
Yes.
But the suggestion that there was some sort of a lottery to determine who goes inside is just incredibly offensive to me.
Okay.
Number one, there could not have been, you know, fire ground operations are what I always called controlled chaos. We knew what we were doing. But it didn't look good from the outside, from outsiders or for outsiders. And you know, and if indeed there was a lottery, I can assure you,
it
was to determine who doesn't go inside.
Yeah, yeah, right? And I understand what you're saying. I was not meaning to be in any way, shape, or form untoward, but ultimately. Some firefighters went into the building, some did not, and there was some sort of a decision-making process involved with that. If I made it sound like it was some sort of a lottery, I do apologize, Steve. But what I was trying to get at was those who went into the buildings knew that they were going. None of them, nobody walked away. Nobody said, I know that the building is going to come down, therefore I'm not going up in the building. That's what I was trying to get at, Steve, and I apologize if I was in any way, shape, or form untoward with regard to your memory of the event and how people ended up going up in the building versus some stayed outside.
Rob, if I may, you know, quite frankly, yeah, that was a shift change fire in New York City. And part of the problem was that men from the night shift as well as men from the day shift responded to that fire. And there was really, and I don't want to be critical of a department, but there was really no way to control who was where and when. It was, again, controlled chaos. But that's, ordinarily, that works out very well, but this time it worked out very poorly.
Yeah, Steve, I noticed last night, and this is kind of an aside, they knew right as the first tower fell, I saw the battalion commander receive the news that someone said structurally the buildings almost 100% were going to collapse. Right as he received word of that, the first tower collapsed. So, but people did know going in, at least to the second tower, that even in the first tower, they knew that the chances of them coming back were almost nil, which I find to be incredible, Steve. And you as a firefighter, you probably already know that. But how do you react to that when you hear that many of those firefighters, in fact, almost all of them knew that there was a really good chance they wouldn't be coming back? I suppose this is something that firefighters, you know, start the day with every day outside of 9/11. What are your thoughts?
Rob, that's what we walk out the door with in the morning.
Yeah, man.
We know that we may not be coming home. And I don't mean to sound overdramatic about it, but that's the fact of the matter is, you know, bad things happen. We're firefighters. And it's inherently dangerous for everyone involved. So it's just a part of the job that we accept. And quite frankly, you know, I've encountered folks along my career, 40 years, by the way. If you don't want to do the job, go home.
Yeah, yeah. So now, what did you do yesterday, if you don't mind my asking? What did yesterday mean to you?
Rob, I wish I could send you a photograph. I bought a banner that's lighted at night. Always remember, never forget. I watched the History Channel all day yesterday with tears in my eyes. One of the things that really troubles me is that the internet has kind of scrubbed access to the really horrific events of that day. Yeah. And that's unfortunate because, that was 21 years ago. My God, kids in high school weren't even born then.
Yeah.
I guess an apt analogy, I wasn't born during Pearl Harbor, very close, but not during Pearl Harbor. So I have no concept of what that meant to our country, but I have an indelible, I'll take it to my grave, the emotions and the feelings I have about 9/11. And
what did you think yesterday about people like Mark Warner and Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris saying that that January 6th protesters and the events of January 6th were akin to what the 9/11 hijackers did to 3,300 Americans?
I don't own a gun, so I can't respond to that.
All right. Thanks for the phone call. I do appreciate it, Steve. Yeah, I don't want to spend the rest of the show on this. I feel like if it falls on the weekend, we need to bring it up on the following Monday, because it was personal, it was profound. And the day that we just allow politicians to bastardize what happened and so many who died from that day is the day that we forget, and we're not going to do that. We're not going to forget that. All right, so coming up, I've got some news. Joe Biden is paring back his cancer moonshot speech. He said he was going to cure cancer if you voted for him for president. So bad news for all the dead people who voted for Democrats when Joe Biden was running. We've got that. We've got some listener mail on the way. Your phone calls as well at 800-922-6680. This is the Rob Carson Show.
Somebody call a plumber. It's time to drain the swamp. It's the Rob Carson Show.
A historical event over the weekend. Bubba Wallace was able to get past institutional racism to win the second Cup Series win of his career at the Kansas International Space or Spaceway Speedway near my house, actually. Yeah, he got his second career Cup Series on Sunday at Kansas Speedway. And despite all the institutional racism in NASCAR that would have caused the noose to be hung in his bay of his car at a race a little over a year ago, he was able to get past that. Of course, we all know it was a lie. And honestly, this whole America's racist thing, I got to thinking about that a lot over the weekend, and what an incredible lie it has been with regard to racism in America, one of the many lies that the left has tried to perpetrate on us. And then, of course, one of the latest lies is bastardizing 9/11. Yesterday, to say that 9/11 is just like January the 6th, which is unbelievable. And remember when they did that? Remember when they did that? They said that January 6th was like 9/11. Remember that? Well, they did it again yesterday. They did it a few months ago, and I said, really, where were the people jumping to their deaths out of the windows of the U.S. Capitol like they did on 9/11? Because about 350 people jumped to their deaths from the Twin Towers on 9/11. That was one of the things that I noticed yesterday in some of the footage was these booms that the fire department were hearing and the reaction to it. And the firemen who went into that building knew that people were leaping to their deaths. And then I want to mention also again what I did earlier. 98% of the people below where the plane struck were evacuated by the fire department, while 350 members of the New York Police Department and Fire Department, mostly firefighters, died that day in the building, so that 98% of those below where the plane struck would survive. So that's pretty amazing. I want to mention, by the way, Dick Morris, we're hopefully going to get him on tomorrow, talk a little bit about what's going on with Donald Trump, what's going on with the raid on Mar-a-Lago. By the way, there's been some sort of debate this morning about Donald Trump being back in Washington, D.C. last night, flying in. He was still wearing his golf shoes, which everybody's saying, oh, yeah, he's being indicted. There's nothing to that, all right? So let's move off that right now. I saw one story in the UK Daily Mail about it. So don't get your panties in a bunch over that one. But anyway, Dick Morris has got a new book. It's called The Return, where he charts Donald Trump's path to victory in 2024. And you can get the book free, by the way, if you just go to Newsmax, sign up for the newsletter. It's thereturn911.com, thereturn911.com, if you'd like to check out that. I don't know if you knew this, but Joe Biden, he is going to fly out today to Boston to unveil his plan. Are you listening to this? Now, this is what Joe Biden said in 2019 when he was running for president. Listen careful.
If I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes America is we're going to cure cancer.
Okay. Joe Biden said that. It's very cynical. It is ridiculous to anyone who has someone in their lives like me who is fighting terminal cancer right now, or anybody who's seen anyone die of cancer, which I have seen happen in many times in my life. It was an insult.
This changes America is we're going to cure cancer.
Now, the president of the United States is saying that now what they're going to do is they're going to slash cancer deaths in half within 25 years, which is pretty much what has been done by the medical industry and the medical profession. Cancer hospitals, American Cancer Society, other organizations, they're already doing that. But Joe Biden has decided to say that they're going to have within 25 years cancer deaths. So he's really basically using cancer as a political weapon, saying that he's going to, I guess, create some sort of publicly funded battle against cancer, even though we've already been doing that for a very long time with a good deal of success. Oh, this is kind of interesting. Speaking of people who are physically, there's something wrong with them, mentally something wrong with them. John Fetterman, who happens to be running against Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania for Senate. He actually did a speech. I don't know how much he spoke this weekend, because the last time he spoke, he was barely able to get any words out because his brain is addled because he had a stroke. Here's what he said to pander to women. Listen to this. This is about as pandery as it gets. And honestly, if women fall for this, they're suckers.
My name is John Fetterwoman.
So he says his name is John Fetterwoman. And he held up a pink T-shirt. And there are some women in the audience who are so stupid that they'll fall for it. They'll go, "Ooh, he said I'm John Fetterwoman. See what he did with his name?" And then he held up a pink T-shirt. So he's clearly down with women's issues and all that. And then another thing that happened this weekend is John Fetterman took his hoodie off. And did anybody see that picture? He's got a giant lump on the back of his head. There's a big lump on the back of his head. He had a stroke, and now he's got a giant lump on the back of his head, and there's some inside audio. This apparently is a Mehmet Oz, who literally saved a woman's life in an audience attended to her because she had a medical emergency over the weekend, and he approached John Fetterman about the bump on the back of his neck, and this is what happened.
You know, I don't mean to embarrass you, but I'm a rather brilliant surgeon. Perhaps I could help you with that hump.
What hump?
Let's go.
Yeah, John Fetterman said, "What hump?" apparently is what happened. Let's take a break. You are listening to a Monday edition of The Rob Carson Show. We're being brainwashed in believing the only way to grow your money for retirement is to risk it in the stock market. And that's not true. You can reach your financial goals and dreams without taking unnecessary risks. Do you really control your retirement money? If you got a 401k or IRA or a similar retirement plan, the government controls it. I hate to break it to you. They decide how much you can borrow and when you can pay it back, and you'll owe taxes and penalties for taking money out too soon or waiting too long, even though it's your money. And thanks to skyrocketing national debt in Congress that continues to spend like a drunken sailor, who knows how much you'll have to pay in taxes during a retirement that could last 30 years. Bank on Yourself is a better way to grow and protect your hard-earned money. With Bank on Yourself, you get guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income with no luck, skill, or guesswork needed. Your plan doesn't go backwards when the markets tumble. Both your principal and growth are locked in. Let's not forget tax-free retirement. You'll know what your tax rate will be in retirement. Zero under new tax law, which protects you from the coming tax tsunami. And finally, built-in inflation protection. Your money is guaranteed to grow by a larger dollar amount every single year in both good times and bad. You can get a free report with all the details on how the Bank on Yourself strategy adds guarantees, predictability, and control to your financial plan. Just go to bankonyourself.com/news. That's bankonyourself.com/news.
Rush Limbaugh shared his comedy for years. Now you'll hear it here. It's the Rob Carson Show.
It is the Rob Carson Show. It's a Monday edition, and I hope you had a glorious weekend with your family. 9/11, the anniversary, 21st anniversary happened yesterday. And for the first time in a while, maybe I was just ready for it. I shed a tear during the national anthem. I always am inspired by the national anthem. Don't get me wrong. There was something about yesterday. There was just something about it. I think maybe for the first time in a while, maybe we focused a little bit more on the 70% plus of both parties who think the country's going in the wrong direction. And instead of spoiled brats who can't get a job in the NFL because they're not good enough, kneeling during the national anthem and drawing all of it. It felt like there was the first time that I felt like we kind of shed a little bit of that. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of America hating out there. But yesterday it just seemed to me that, I don't know. Things felt a little better. Maybe I'm mistaken. We got a long way to go. Don't get me wrong. We've got a big fight ahead of us coming up on November the 8th, and they're going to throw everything at us, every way, shape, and form. The left is going to do it. And if you look at all of the things that are happening, the totality of the madness that's happening in the country, it's all coming from the Democrat Party, and it's only going to get worse before November. EOTP, Eyes on the Prize. Coming up, Kamala Harris says, and I don't even know why she's even being interviewed seriously, because what she says is such nonsense. She says our border is completely secure, even though 5 million people have streamed across the border since Joe Biden became the president. And we know that the border is open because we're not stupid, you see. Joe in Dundalk has a comment about 9/11 and another anniversary that happened yesterday. Joe, welcome to the Rob Carson Show, and a good Monday to you.
Thank you, Rob. Good to hear you.
Yes, sir.
I like hearing you just talk every day.
Thanks.
Nothing to take away from yesterday's events, as tragic as they were, but I want to bring to your attention another anniversary that happened yesterday, 10 years ago. It's the 10th anniversary of the Benghazi attack.
Yeah.
That nobody seems to know about. And
the subsequent cover-up, by the way.
Yeah, and the people that were responsible for it, they were brought before Congress where they lied. And, hey, look, it was only 4 Americans that died.
Yeah.
What difference does it make? They're already dead, as she said.
Yeah.
What difference does it make? Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, and it makes all the difference. It makes all the difference in the world. And as much as she tries to obfuscate it and the Democrats try to obfuscate, they did it yesterday. They did. Dear God in heaven, what they did yesterday was so sickening that they took 9/11 on the anniversary of 9/11 to go after Trump supporters is just so ungodly foul. And then if you look at Benghazi, 4 people were left hung out to dry. We had acts of bravery that would merit statues being built that happened in Benghazi. People who knew, like the firefighters going up in the World Trade Center, that people were going to die, and they still said, despite unbelievable odds, they went to try to rescue people in that embassy. And then Hillary Clinton insulted their memory when she testified before Congress, and then yesterday, even more insulting by Hillary Clinton with regard to January the 6th and 9/11. Go ahead,
Rob. I can tell you're a more eloquent speaker than I am. I just wanted to throw that out there, and
Joe,
I'll let you handle the rest of it.
Joe, listen to me, man. What you say is more powerful than anything I could say in my life. All right.
Well, all I can say is that there were 4 heroes in Benghazi.
Amen.
2 of those, as the firefighters went charging into the towers,
yeah.
The military was told to stand down. In Benghazi, but 2 of those fellows, they were Delta operators, if I'm not mistaken, they disobeyed, and they went, and they were subsequently killed.
Yeah.
And that was a crying shame. Those men were heroes.
Well, despite the left trying to erase that memory, you remember, I remember. My listeners remember, and we will never forget. And people are going to be—they're going to be held accountable for all this nonsense, Joe. You just got to keep your eyes on the prize, bro. Just got to keep your eyes on the prize. There you go.
Right.
Thanks for the phone call. Thanks for the phone call. So, it's funny, Lori Lightfoot, the left, and this is an example of let them eat cake liberalism, by the way. And I came up with this expression decades ago when I was in Washington, D.C., and I talked about we're living in a tale of two cities. We have the bourgeois, we have the proletariat, we are the proletariat, we fight for the crumbs, and there are edicts that come from Washington, D.C., and they just say, make it so, and we're all supposed to just abide by it regardless, and they live by a different standard. They say that you must use poisonous light bulbs in your house. They have multiple mansions. They say that you have to drive an electric car, a piece of crap electric car, and they ride in these motorcades of big old fat SUVs in Washington, D.C. I know this because I live there. They insist that you ride a bike to work. They insist that you drive a crappy car. They fly around the world in private jets and say that there's climate change and all this nonsense. And then, of course, they say that we are a sanctuary city and that we would support anyone coming across the border to live the American dream until it comes to the border of their city. 147 migrants arrived in the Windy City on Wednesday of last week, and on Wednesday of last week, the mayor bused them summarily to Republican strongholds nearby, to a place called Burr Ridge. The mayor there, Gary Grasso, said that they'd be putting them up at the Hampton Inn, because despite the big talk from sanctuary cities like New York and San Francisco and Chicago, they really aren't sanctuary cities. They just want as many illegals to come into the country and let those people on the southern border, those border towns, deal with it. And as far as I'm concerned, I hope that Greg Abbott buses a million people into Washington, D.C. I'm absolutely serious. 100%, because there's no way otherwise that they are going to understand the pain that they're putting the American people through, and they have to live through it in their ivory halls and in their little neighborhoods surrounding Washington, D.C., 7 of the 10 richest counties in America around Washington, D.C., even though there's no manufacturing. It's all your money being distributed to cronies. And here is just the piece de resistance yesterday. Kamala Harris insisting with Chuck Todd that the southern border, despite all of these migrants coming across and being bussed into Chicago and whatnot, that the border is effectively closed. Do you know why she says this? Because she thinks you're stupid.
I think that there is no question that we have to do what the president and I asked Congress to do. Is the first request we made, pass a bill to create a pathway to citizenship.
That's nonsense. She never did.
The border is secure, but we also have a broken immigration system, in particular over the last 4 years before we came.
Then why have you introduced no legislation to actually fix the southern border rather than just open it wholesale? And another thing, why are you the border czar and you haven't been to the damn border yet? How about that? How about that for number one? If it's such a concern and if you think the border is closed, why haven't you been there? Why hasn't the president been there? Why hasn't Nancy Pelosi been there? They all went over to Ukraine because the Ukraine situation is a giant retirement fund for them, in case you are wondering. Think about the amount of money that could have been spent on problems in America versus the $60 billion we sent to Ukraine. How about that? And then D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser is what they're doing is they're responding. Listen, this is fantastic. They are responding to illegals being sent to Washington, D.C. by setting aside $10 million to create an Office of Migrant Services. That's what they're going to create. They're going to create a bureaucracy, and this is going to do something. It says, we celebrate our diversity and respect all D.C. residents, no matter their immigration status. Since April of 2022, Texas and Arizona have bused 9,400 migrants to the Washington, D.C. area. And what they did is they're going to take $10 million and create a government department to deal with it, which will do precisely zero, absolutely nothing with regard to what's going on in our southern border. It is quite simply remarkable. Quite simply remarkable. And then, speaking of insanity, there's what's happening in the state of Illinois. And we've seen these no cash bail, the issues caused by no cash bail, the gigantic increase in crime in cities like New York City. Would you go to New York City right now? Would you go hang out in New York City by yourself? Would you walk down to Times Square like I did last December? Would you do that in New York City? No, I wouldn't right now. Would you want to live in San Francisco right now? Would you want to live in certainly not Chicago anymore. Would you want to live in any of those places? I don't think so. And yet, Illinois is created this new law that will eliminate cash bail starting on January the 1st of 2023. So all of the smash and grabs that are going on in Chicago, all of the nonsense that's going on in places around the country, San Francisco, you can go in and steal $1,000 worth of stuff from a CVS and not be charged. They've decided to double down on it in places like Chicago and the entire state of Illinois. I don't know, as anybody who lives in Illinois, how you could justify continuing to live in Illinois. We'll get to that very shortly on the show. Let me see what else I got here. Well, I'm going to go with Trump. Let's not go there. I'll stick to this because I've got a lot of things I want to get to before as the show progresses, including a special guest at the bottom of the hour talking about. But Illinois Democrats eliminated cash bail on felonies, including, listen to this, does this make any sense? And this is part of the madness that I've been talking about. And Joe Biden actually mentioned this in Philadelphia. He says things aren't normal. It was all done by Democrats. He is trying to make it like it's our problem. We know it's not. But listen to this. No cash bail on felonies, including second-degree murder, aggravated battery, arson, kidnapping, drug-induced homicide, and looting. And looting. J.B. Pritzker signed HB 3653, the Safe T Act. You know, they came up with a clever acronym. It's SAFE with the letter T. It's not really an acronym. It's a word and then an initial. Safety, accountability, fairness, and equity. And whenever it says fairness and equity, realize that that's communist lingo for everybody's treated the same no matter what they do, essentially. And this will go into law in February, transforming the pretrial detention so low-income people aren't thrown behind bars while only the wealthy walk free, diverting low-level drug crimes into substance treatments programs and reducing excessive stays in prison, which, of course, will cause Illinois to become even more of an armpit than it is right now. More on this, and your phone calls are welcome here at 800-922-6680. This is a Monday edition of The Rob Carson Show.
Biden's first year in office summed up in three words. Welcome back, Carter.
That's not right. It's not fair to us. And honestly, it's not fair to the world.
It's the Rob Carson Show.
So Illinois, for some reason, has decided to double down on the nonsense that we've seen in places like New York City, which is no longer safe to really be in. San Francisco, and I don't know if you saw over the weekend, there's a group of people who are suing San Francisco. Or no, that's Portland, sorry. Portland, there are homeless people camped out on the sidewalks, drug addicts and all that stuff, living in tents. And so handicapped people have sued the city because they can't go on sidewalks. Then in places like San Francisco, open-air drug markets, they're going to try and close those down, but apparently they've opened up a Pandora's box that they cannot fight. And then of course, now Illinois literally is doubling down on all that nonsense. This is a brief montage of what is going on in the state of Illinois with this new law, the Safe T Act. They did add some sound effects behind this, so don't be bothered by this. But listen carefully to what the governor and the legislator of the state of Illinois, which is going to hell in a handbasket, have given their thumbs up to.
As of January 1st, 2023, the following things will go into effect, and people need to be aware of this. It abolishes cash bail for almost every offense. This includes, but isn't limited to, kidnapping, armed robbery, second-degree murder, drug-induced homicide, aggravated DUI, threatening a public official, and aggravated fleeing and eluding. Offenders released on electronic monitoring have to be in violation for 48 hours before law enforcement can act. They could almost drive to Alaska before we can even look for them.
Now, this is essentially ruling against the will of the people. And if I were in Illinois, and I lived in Illinois for about 6 months, and nothing against the people of Illinois, but honestly, wow, I'd never live there again. And this is another reason being. And this comes from like a starry-eyed kid. When I was, let me just mention here, I was 21 years old. The first airline flight that I ever took, the first flight I took in a jet was when I was 21 years old, and I went to Chicago. And I grew up listening to the big radio stations in Chicago, WLS, and I listened to Johnny Brandmeier and all these great personalities. And I always dreamed about living in Chicago and working in Chicago. And I got to tell you right now, I would never, ever live in Chicago. You couldn't pay me enough to live in Chicago. And that's a damn shame because it was a marvelous city. The same way with New York. I went to New York for the very first time last year. And I said, I could understand why people thought this was the greatest city in the world, but not so much anymore. But Democrats keep doubling down on this. And I have to say, what's the reasoning behind it? When you look at the open border in the South, when you look at policies like this that clearly don't make any sense and people aren't behind, what's the point? Other than it's still the class of 1968 trying to tear down the country. It's still a people who are a very small minority in charge, and by hook or by crook, they are going to cause as much destruction as they can in hopes of their Marxist dream taking hold. But most probably, that Marxist dream is going up in flames, so that what they're going to do is take the country down with it. This is a report from CNN last week, John Avalon. Now, normally CNN, not exactly the voice of reason, but here he is talking about this ignoring of violent crime by states like Illinois and other states around the country and how Americans have woken up to it.
When the state legislature finally acted on criminal justice this summer, they decided to focus on semantics instead of solutions, officially replacing the term inmate with incarcerated person in state laws. Seriously, that's what they did. Now, sometimes we forget that public safety is a fundamental civil right, and it's often lower-income neighborhoods that suffer the most from high crime, while wealthier neighborhoods stay relatively...
Yeah, but you see, those low-income neighborhoods, they need to defund their police because the racism and stuff.
Safe. In fact, black and Hispanic Democrats are more likely than white Democrats to support increased spending on local police.
Shut the front door. All of those cul-de-sac Karens were wrong?
That's according to a Pew survey from late last year. Look, politicizing crime seeks to gain from other people's pain. But trying to ignore crime for ideological reasons is both callous and clueless. And it's sure to promote a political backlash.
Callous and clueless, so why even do it? You know, I mean, doesn't it kind of make you wonder why they're doing it? Why they would do this madness in the state of Illinois after seeing what has happened in New York City, among other things, with the Safety account, Fairness and Equity Today? Who's down with this other than the parade balloon of a governor of the state of Illinois and the people in the legislature? Unbelievable. And this is kind of interesting. C-SPAN the other day, they opened up the phones, and a person of color called in from New York. And here's what people of color are saying about what's going on in the country. And I don't think it's what Democrats, to be quite honest, are expecting.
As a New Yorker, for the most part, pertaining to law and order and issues of the country nationally, I believe the Republicans are better. Why?
But wait a minute, they're racist and white supremacists. Don't you know that, person of color?
As a New Yorker that lived in New York from Mayor Koch through Mayor Bloomberg, Democrats, and particularly these days, in all honesty, as a black man telling the truth, Democratic mayors that's black, whether they male or female, Democratic police commissioners that's black, male or female, Democratic cities, they're run into the ground. The black mayors, the black police commissioners, be they male or female, they don't really put the hammer down on crime. They're real soft on crime, as opposed to the Republicans, who, of course, are hard on crime, and they are way more supportive of the police, as opposed to the Democrats, more supportive of the victims of police brutality.
And this is why all the distraction in the last few weeks with the demonization of Republicans, all the while J.B. Pritzker is passing this Safety Act, it's all nonsense. This is why, remember that, the walk-away movement? Those were largely people of color. 500,000 on Facebook said they were walking from the Democrat Party because of their racism and their pro-crime policies. That group disappeared from Facebook right before the election. All right, coming up, we've got Chris Markowski, the watchdog on Wall Street, to talk about what's happening as far as our economy, coming up on The Rob Carson Show. Monday edition of The Rob Carson Show. Joining me right now, Chris Markowski, the host of The Watchdog on Wall Street, and he's on the Newsmax hotline. Chris, how you doing today, man?
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm glorious. Well, it was a weekend where the remembrance of 9/11 happened on a Sunday, and I know that you were in New York on September the 11th. I'd like to get just off the top of your head here, where you were on 9/11 and how this year's 9/11 affected you. Because for the first time in a long time, I watched an NFL game, and I didn't see a lot of virtue signaling. I didn't see a lot of anti-American stuff, and particularly with regard to the game you were at yesterday with the Jets, the crowd sang the national anthem quite proudly. So let's start with 9/11, where you were and where we are today.
That's one thing that, you know, first for Jets and Giants, we've never really had that problem where it's going off the left wing deep end by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. We've kind of avoided all of that. You know, thank God. But yeah, you're putting that aside, it was special yesterday. There's no doubt about that at all. And again, you know, you're reliving things. And I'd have to say, the one thing that really, it always pops into my mind that I'll never ever really get rid of, At that point in time, I was just recently married. We got married in 2000, and we moved out of Manhattan, and we were out in one of the boroughs. It's an area called Whitestone in Queens, and it's a great neighborhood. Tons of firefighters and police officers, and a real mix of a crowd there. And for the next, you know, several months, all I heard almost on a daily basis was bagpipes. It was one funeral after another. It was never ending. And it's that's probably one of the most haunting things for me, because I'll never forget that.
Yeah. And when I was in 9/11, my son was 18 months old. I was a new father. I was in Cincinnati, Ohio when it happened. I was mentioning earlier that this was the Pearl Harbor of my generation. I believe you're a part member of my generation. You're Generation Xer. And I believe that our generation really stepped up like so many had in the past with regard to the greatest generation. We forget a lot of the times Vietnam, the men who fought in Vietnam, many of them signed up for a war that a government wasn't supporting properly, and they fought as valiantly as any other generation. Our generation stepped up, went to war, kicked some serious rear end. Now we see them wearing hats like Desert Storm and whatnot, or Iraq war veteran or Afghanistan war veteran. It's kind of strange. But I guess kind of felt yesterday like a lot of the wokeism that we've seen kind of went out the door yesterday nationally. I just felt that we didn't see the virtue signaling on the field that we have in the past. And I think part of that might be people are just fighting back against it. And part of it, maybe the NFL just saying, you know, knock it off. What do you think?
Maybe a little bit of both. I do think that our nation does have, that we have our swings, the pendulum swings, and I'm being a little bit too optimistic, thinking that the pendulum is starting to swing in the opposite direction. You're starting to see pushback in a myriad of different places. In particular, it's coming from certain states where you've got great leadership at the local and state level. Where, you know, parents are starting to reclaim and win school boards, and you're starting to push back on a lot of this. People are actually starting to wake up to the fact that it's just patently absurd. It's ridiculous. It's going to take some time, but, you know, I think that pendulum hopefully is going to continue to swing.
Let's talk a little bit about the economy, where we are. A lot of issues. The Fed increasing interest rates sounds like it's going to happen again right now. What's the average on a 30-year? About just shy of 6%. What is that doing to the real estate market and people who were considering buying in January? And what does it portend for the future, the immediate future anyway?
Well, you're going to see in many markets around the country, you're going to see housing prices adjust. And that's normal. That's what's supposed to happen. I mean, there's an inverse relationship between interest rates and the price of a home. Many homes are priced in America based upon your monthly payment and what you can afford monthly. And a mortgage bill is made up of principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And if certain aspect, part of that bill has to rise, and in this case, if it's the interest on the money that you're borrowing, then obviously the principal is going to have to come down, which meaning that the price of homes are going to come down. Again, they're talking about how home prices are dropping and, oh, my God, the sky is going to fall. Why is that such a bad thing? If my home value, what do I care? It's not a bank. It's a bill that I've got to pay every single month and I've got to keep going. And that's what you got to take it as. Oh, granted, if you wanted to sell soon and move, okay, you might not make as much money. But more often than not, if you hold on to a piece of property for, you know, if it's not a speculation thing, you hold on it for about 10 years, you're going to probably do okay, unless you live in some sort of crazy, city like, you know, Portland and Seattle, where they, you know, defund the police and your neighborhoods have gone to hell.
Yes.
But, you know, other than that, you're going to do okay. And, you know, it's how people have to have a relationship and understanding money and how it works. Interest rates are going up, meaning what? The price of homes are going to have to come down.
Well, and it had to correct itself. And this time, unlike with 2005, 2006-ish, it wasn't because of a subprime crisis. This is just a matter of essentially kind of out of control real estate prices that were where income was not matching the price of homes going through the ceiling. So there obviously was a correction. I just kind of wonder.
Supply. It was supply issues as well. When we had so many things, so many things got so expensive for home builders, just to put up a home, and they were having to price in. We had all these supply chain issues, we have commodity price issues, all of these things, and it slowed the building process to a crawl, not to mention made it more expensive. That led to a lot of it as well. It's also, you also see a massive amount of people moving out of urban areas and during COVID, and going out, and massive amounts of people moving to states like Texas and Florida, yeah, and Arizona and Tennessee, and they can only keep up with the homes.
You live in the state of New York. This is kind of a little off topic. It sounds like Lee Zeldin is tightening up the race there. Do you suppose New Yorkers have kind of figured it out with regard to not only economy, COVID lockdowns, also crime in New York City? Do you suppose that might be enough to possibly cause a shift with regard to the governor's mansion in the state of New York?
I don't know. It's a tough call. I think, listen, I've got two more years, my son in high school, and then I'm going to be, leaving the state back to Florida as well. But, I don't know. The demographics, I know a lot of people have been leaving the state and going to other places. I don't know how it's going to affect things. You just had a progressive versus progressive election. You had the Upper East Side versus the Upper West Side because of this gerrymandering thing that took place. We had Nadler and Maloney, yeah, and they went after one another. But people don't even realize, how many people showed up to vote? 8%.
Wow.
I mean, at 8%, that was it. How do you think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won her seat the first time? Nobody showed up. People, I think, are kind of, in many respects, just say, what, why bother? I'm not going to even bother. I don't have to. My vote really doesn't matter. It's unfortunate. Where I live, get a good mix of people. It tends to be very, very much more conservative here on the North Shore of Long Island, and there's pockets here and there. How the state's going to go, I it's going to be a tough call. It really is. You got your bastions of left. You got entrenched areas. You've got Albany. You've got a lot of things that makes it very, very difficult for Republicans to win in this state, much like California, the way jigger things there.
And you're bugging out. I mean, you're going to bug out in 2 years. So obviously this has got to be, I would assume, a little difficult for you, because aren't you a native New Yorker?
Well, I lived in New York. I grew up upstate New York, and I went to college here, worked in the city for a while. But I also lived in Florida for 15 years. Gotcha. Moved back here for my kids and school and their sports and things like that. And planning the whole time to move back as soon as they were done.
Yeah. So on Friday, I believe the Biden administration released like a 56-page tone-deaf report on the economy, shouting to the high heavens that happy days are here again. What are you seeing? Because I know we're going to get an inflation report this week. What do you expect from that?
Well, I think you're gonna definitely see them. I like it. It's like if your team's down by 50 points and you score a touchdown and it's now 50-6 and you're doing an end zone dance.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to probably see inflation, moderate. They were chopping down. Oh, my God, it didn't get any higher last month. Yeah. Last month they were cheering. I mean, it's probably, you're going to see it shrink a little bit, which is great. Yeah. I'm not saying it's such a bad thing. You got, airline prices coming down a little bit, hotels a little bit. Rental car. There's going to be certain things that have come down. To me, as far as inflation is concerned, it's always the things that it's the stuff that you have to live on.
Yeah.
It's food. It's electricity. It's your oil heat. It's stuff like coffee. Yeah. You go into the grocery store, go into a restaurant. These things are not coming down.
No.
Okay, they're still very, very expensive, and this stuff you have to have. Oh, gee, great, the television prices are coming down. I don't need a TV, nor can I eat one.
Yes.
So it's, you got to take a look at inflation in a different way. I've always broken things up in regards to the survival, the things you need to survive on. and the other stuff.
Yeah. Well, there was a survey last week that said 35% of Americans literally do not have enough working one full-time job to pay their rent, utilities, and food. That's 35% of Americans. So as much as, you know, the Biden administration attempted to do a victory dance last week, there is still an enormous amount of suffering that's going on across the country, and I don't see it getting any better anytime soon. I want to ask you real quick, kind of off topic, with regard to Twitter. Last week, the former CEO of Disney said that he believes the reason why Twitter is still sitting there is that a substantial number of the users are bots. You also had, it looks like Elon Musk is no longer, I don't know if he's no longer part of the deal or what's going on, but what does that say to you about big social networks like Twitter with regard to what they're really worth? Do you think Twitter was ever worth what they were trying to sell it for?
Oh, no. It wasn't what they were trying to sell. It was what Musk actually offered for the thing. I mean, you could take a look at valuations and stocks all the time. I mean, that's kind of what I do. You know, when I see Peloton or Netflix at these ridiculous valuations, my job is to say, whoa, well, it's just ridiculous. I mean, you might have an interesting business, but not at that price. And again, I think, Musk got cold feet when it came to this. I didn't understand his thinking in the first place. When this happened, you used to be able to hire people, businesses in places where you could, if you didn't have any Twitter followers, they could come up with, get your bots, get you a couple hundred of them to make it look like you were popular, for crying out loud. It was actually a business. So, I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't go on it. I've always thought, Twitter was just this massive sewer. It's like this. It's like the pink slime in Ghostbusters 2 that was going underneath New York City.
Yes.
That just makes everybody, negative energy and makes everybody want to argue and fight. You can't have any sort of Socratic debate in these things. If somebody attacks you on social media, here's a bit of advice. Ignore them.
Exactly.
Okay? The conversation's never going to go anywhere.
Exactly.
It's just that simple.
What is your gut telling you about the fall as far as our economy is concerned? And then if Republicans do manage to turn things around with regard to the House and the Senate, what do you think that's going to mean for the country going forward after November?
Difficult to call. There's only a couple guys that are actually proposing anything at all. I mean, Rick Scott is one of the only guys out there that's actually saying, hey, this is what I'd like to do. Most Republicans are, not really saying much and just waiting for Democrats to screw up. That's not a plan for winning this fall. So everybody's got this red wave nonsense. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You got to play the ball game, right?
Yeah.
Tennessee Titans thought they were going to beat the Giants yesterday. Didn't work out that way. Yay, go Giants.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, Republicans got to get their act together.
Yeah.
They really do. They got to take a look to see how things are done in some of these successful states.
Yes.
And they got to come up with something. You can't just, run on, Biden bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Markowski, thanks for the time, dude. I appreciate it. Make sure to check out the Watchdog on Wall Street. Go to Watchdog on Wall Street. Where else can people find you on social media, sir?
Oh, I'm a little Facebook fan page and all that, nonsense out there. I'm not cool. I don't have a Snap and stuff like that. I don't know how that works.
All right, my brother. Have a glorious week. Thanks for joining me. We'll have you on again soon. Let's take a break. You are listening to The Rob Carson Show.
There's only one Rob Carson on the radio. Oh, thank God. It's The Rob Carson Show.
Coming up, I do want to address Joe Scarborough saying that Jesus was pro-abortion. That was pretty good on Friday. I should have covered it, but I had so much to talk about. Just had a few things to talk about. Did get a nice note from Steve. Hi, Rob. Thanks for making a contact. He says, I just wanted to say your observations on your September 6th podcast about great people of color from other nations outside the U.S. making a positive impact on the world stage is practically nil, with the exception of Nelson Mandela and whatnot. Anyway, I made the point that if America was such a horrible place for people of color, then why are the greatest people of color in the history of mankind? Why did they come from the United States of America despite it all? I mean, you look at the greatest people of color, black people, let's just say black people, the greatest black people in the history of the world who not only changed life in America, but around the world in science and entertainment and, you know, with regard to civil rights, Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, athletes like Willie Mays, Hank Aaron and whatnot, entertainment figures like Oprah Winfrey, you know, politicians like Barack Obama and whatnot. And honestly, I'm just kind of done with all this BS about America being racist. And I thought a lot about this weekend with regard to the country being called racist. And honestly, a lot of the things that the madness that we've experienced in the last couple of years has been a long time coming. Saying that America is fundamentally racist is nonsense. And I remember originally when my son was born that some people were starting to bandy about this white privilege thing. And I looked at my life growing up and I said from the get-go with regard to white privilege, bullcrap. You know, Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, Barack Obama was raised a spoiled, entitled kid. He went to the Punahou School in Hawaii with his grandparents. His father, who he wrote a book about, was a deadbeat loser from hell. My father left me when I was seven, so, you know, I kind of had that going for me as well. Michelle Obama, over the weekend I was reading, she stayed at a hotel in Manhattan where the room rate for the suite is $30,000 a night. And I got to thinking about white privilege and all of that, and how many people in the United States who are people, you know, white people, or, you know, maybe Asian people, or, well, Hispanic people, that's what they make per year. $30,000 a year. And honestly, that's when I really kind of started to hit me that we've been sold a bill of goods with regard to racism in the country. Yes, the country has had sins of the past, and yes, Democrats kept those policies going well into the 20th century with regard to Jim Crow. But the country right now, and the country that I was raised in, is not fundamentally racist. Otherwise, all of the people who I've just mentioned would never have been able to become the giants in world history that they've been able to become. And so I think that's one of the things we have to put aside as we go forward into the next election. We look at things that unite us as a people. 70%+ of us believe the country is going in the wrong direction. And I would venture to say that more and more of those people are people of color. I really, really do. So I do appreciate the note. I was going to get into Joe Scarborough saying that Jesus was pro-abortion. I'm going to get into that after the top of next hour. And we've also got some new news. Apparently, the rat who shared the Roe v. Wade decision before it was announced has been cornered, according to Justice Neil Gorsuch. We'll get to that and what is coming, the coming bombshell, hopefully before the election, on the way. This is a Monday edition of the Rob Carson Show.
They called us deplorables. We're not gonna take it. They shut down our country. No, we ain't gonna take it. They say our thoughts are disinformation. This is our response, the Rob Carson Show.
It is the Rob Carson Show, and this is the last hour of the radio program this Monday. I hope you had a delightful weekend with your family. First official weekend of the NFL season. And I enjoyed football for the first time in a while. There was a time where I didn't even watch the NFL. I was done with it. I was really, really done with it. And you know what I'm talking about, because I know that you felt the same way. Remember all the wokeism, all the Black Lives Matter, all of that stuff, all the virtue signaling during games. And I guess maybe partially to recoup the losses caused by this idiocy, but also maybe that Americans are just tired of that nonsense, of that woke nonsense. That we all kind of, I guess, maybe, and also, you know, yesterday was 9/11. So all of these things kind of came together, and I was able to return to watching the NFL yesterday without feeling bad about it. Like, you know, did you? That's kind of the way I felt. I saw a couple of really good versions of the national anthem, and I saw this return to patriotism, which was kind of nice. And you know, we're used to everything in our life is being assaulted. Okay. The country, its foundings have been assaulted. Yesterday, we had the memory of 9/11 assaulted. People, Democrats, Senator Mark Warren, Hillary Clinton, among others, comparing 9/11, which is singularly the most gigantic terror attack on the history of the country, the most lost lives in an attack on our country. And for some reason, yesterday, there were some people, some Democrats who said yesterday that it was somehow equal to an event they created on January the 6th. What are you talking about? They created on January the 6th. A million people went to Washington, D.C. January 6th to see Donald Trump speak. Because millions of people, 70 million, said, huh, there's something really weird about the election. And you know, why did they stop the vote count on the night of the election? They said in Atlanta there was a water main break, and the vote counting stopped. And Donald Trump was way ahead, and a lot of Republicans went to bed and said, huh, that's weird. And then the next morning we find out, oh, Joe Biden won. Because millions of ballots came in for Joe Biden almost exclusively around the country. And Mark Zuckerberg put $400 million of his own money into unmanned ballot boxes. And then Dinesh D'Souza used the same phone tracking technology the FBI used on January 6th. People on Capitol Hill to go after them. Dinesh D'Souza went after mules carrying multiple ballots to different ballot drop boxes. Then to Stacey Abrams' office and other Democrat offices, and then back to the ballot boxes. Same technology, but with the FBI, it was perfectly fine. But with Dinesh D'Souza in his movie 2,000 Mules, oh, that was disinformation. Disinformation and misinformation. For some reason, the last few years, your opinion, and thankfully, I think we've turned the curve on this, and I think part of it is because of this show. I'm not saying my influence is bigger than I think it is, but I do believe it's cutting through, and it started here, saying, when the hell did having an opinion become disinformation? Well, it's because when the Biden administration decided that they could use a Stalinistic word to shut down countering opinions. So now a lot of people are saying, well, you know what? I think there was something going on with January the 6th. And you know what? I knew there was something going on with Hunter Biden's laptop. They called that disinformation. The FBI called it disinformation and stopped Facebook and YouTube and Twitter from saying anything about it before the election. 6 weeks out from the 2020 election, they shut it down. And now that same FBI that bought and paid for dossier, Hillary Clinton paid for, the FBI worked with them to get a surveillance warrant against the Trump campaign transition team and presidency to, at least during the campaign, throw the 2016 election, saying that Donald Trump had colluded with Russians. That did a faceplant. But the people who were involved were the same people. And they're still in charge today. And they're still trying the same crap, except for now people are beginning to say, you know what, this whole misinformation and disinformation stuff is nonsense. We should be able to pursue the truth. And the truth is coming out. It is coming out. So this is the headline. SCOTUS Roe v. Wade mole is cornered. And you think about this. The Roe v. Wade decision was released before the decision was made official. And the reason being was because Democrats wanted to intimidate the Supreme Court justices who would vote to get rid of Roe v. Wade. That was what it was there for. And if you believe otherwise, you're an idiot. Okay? That's just it. They released it because they wanted to intimidate the justices. Don't believe me? What has the DOJ done to protect conservative justices, even after one of them, there was an assassination attempt? Zero. You know why? Because they're not on our side. But we're going to find out. The truth is going to come out. The truth about all of this nonsense is going to come out. But before that happens, the Democrats are going to try to drag us into hell with them. That said, an investigation into 70 individuals over the bombshell leak is almost complete. Justice Neil Gorsuch revealed that the committee has been very busy. They're looking forward to their report, I hope, soon. This as much as it has disappeared in the rearview mirror of our past recently, is going to be in the fore here pretty quickly. And I'll be curious to see who was behind it, because you got to kind of wonder if maybe there was another justice involved in this. When you think about leaking a Supreme Court leaning to the press in order to intimidate justices to make another decision, that's pretty big. That's pretty gigantic. Gorsuch did not say whether the report would be made public. Justices have roundly condemned the leak, Gorsuch included, and suggested it was intended to sway their decision in the abortion case. Improper efforts to influence judicial decision-making from whatever side are a threat to the judicial process. And the Democrat Party has done everything they can to throw everything sacred under the bus for the sake of their political expediency. I mentioned that with regard to 9/11 yesterday. 9/11 is a sacred commemoration. It is about those who died that day. It is about those who gave their lives, including those on Flight 93, who went to average citizens, went to the cockpit knowing that they faced doom, but they would save lives on the ground. That was the same sort of bravery that drove those 350 firefighters to their deaths in the World Trade Center. 700 had reported, half of them died. And yet, yesterday, Democrats, like Hillary Clinton, decided they would make January the 6th, which they've been trying to pound home as an insurrection, which they've been using to try to label Trump supporters as fascists and anti-Democrats. This is what they do. And another person who decided to take something that is sacred to you and me, to average Americans, and bastardize it for the sake of political expediency would be Joe Scarborough. Joe Scarborough and Michael Steele and those rhinos who inhabit MSNB and SE Cup. I got to tell you guys, I don't know what drove them to forsake everything that any conservative would consider to be a lifelong commitment to an ideal. See, I'm a conservative because I have a lifetime commitment to an ideal of a smaller government, lower taxes, a southern border that is strong, a strong military, a strong belief in a God, all of these things that are conservative. I would never sell them for a price, but Joe Scarborough, Michael Steele, S.E. Cupp, Larry Hogan, they have. I don't understand how you can do that. How do you do something that's fundamental in your life and turn it upside down in middle age? Is it the price? Because I'll tell you, if MSNBC called me and said, we'll pay you $20 million a year if you go on the air and you espouse everything that liberals in the Democrat Party espouse, I'd tell them to... Well, I can't say it on the radio. I wouldn't do it. I don't understand. So I don't understand how Joe Scarborough can say, and he's a Christian, can say that Jesus Christ essentially was pro-abortion. Now, I want you to listen to this, because this, it doesn't get any more fundamental than this. And when you are saying something like this, something has shifted within your soul, something that is just not right. Here is Joe Scarborough.
Just say, as a Southern Baptist, wow, that grew up reading the Bible, maybe a backslidden Baptist, but I still know the Bible. Jesus never once talked about abortion, never once. And it was happening back in ancient times. It was happening during his time. Never once mentioned it. And for people perverting the gospel of Jesus.
That's what he's doing right now. He's doing that.
Jesus Christ down to one issue. It's heresy.
No, you know what? And he talks about heresy. He has no idea what he's talking about. He also thinks that Bible banging somehow makes you actually understand the Bible. And just quoting the Bible doesn't mean you understand it. He clearly does not. He says that because Jesus did not talk about abortion, endorsement, even though it was happening in that time, that it is a tacit endorsement of abortion because he's not condemning it. Really? Were there abortion clinics in the year zero? I don't think so. Would a man who was born of a virgin mother, the child of God, espouse abortion? This is the level that they would sink to. Here's a little more from Joe Scarborough.
Go, if you don't believe me, if that makes you angry, why don't you do
something? Oh, no, it makes me angry. It does make me angry because you're wrong.
Something you haven't done in a long time. Open the Bible. Open the New Testament. Read the red letters. You won't see it there. And yet there are people.
Wow. Like I said, it doesn't get any bigger than selling your soul for political expediency. And if you take your life as a Christian and what you take from it is that Jesus didn't talk about abortion, therefore he was cool with it, is quite honestly, it doesn't get any lower than that. It really, really doesn't. I don't understand it. And I will tell you, as long as I am a host of this show and as long as I breathe, I would never do something like that. Never, ever, ever. Now, coming up, we've got a ton of stuff, including the left attempting to bastardize Queen Elizabeth Memorial. Then I'm going to get into, vaccines. And a lot of municipalities, a lot of companies are saying, you know, we don't need those vaccine mandates anymore. And a whole lot of young people are dying of the vaccine. We will get to that as the show progresses. You are listening to a Monday edition of The Rob Carson Show.
Country and aren't down with freedom of speech, maybe you should move down to Cuba. It's the Rob Carson Show.
It's Monday edition of the Rob Carson Show. As much as the left tries, they're trying to erase Donald Trump from history like Joseph Stalin did, members of his cabinet that he sent off to death camps and photoshopped out of pictures, using the technology of the time. People are trying to get rid of the memory of Donald Trump, including going so far as to question Donald Trump possibly attending Queen Elizabeth's funeral, even though he was a head of state. He worked with Queen Elizabeth, had a good working relationship with her. Also, by the way, the big story this morning, Donald Trump arriving in Washington, D.C., still wearing his golf shoes. That was a big story this morning. People were on the left were convinced, oh, he's got to be indicted this morning. He's so shocked he arrived in Washington, D.C. in his golf shoes. They actually have hit the golf course today and said that the trip to Washington, D.C. was a working trip. And so nothing to that, apparently, as the left was rubbing its hands. They said, this time we have him after two failed impeachment attempts and 6 years of pursuit and now this search at Mar-a-Lago under very shaky conditions. We're still waiting on the results of the special master with regard to the search of Mar-a-Lago. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, and hopefully the judge will use the special master to throw the entire damn thing out because it was crooked as hell. Let's go to Barbara in Baltimore this morning. Barbara joins us on a Monday, calling early this week. Barbara, what's on your mind today?
Well, I tell you what, so much is going on.
Yeah.
And I don't normally call in early because I like to hear what's going on during mm-hmm. the week.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
So what caused you to call in today, Barbara?
Well, I attended Vince Ellison's event yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I also watched the movie from what's his name?
Robert the new movie, Robert Davi's movie.
No, the
I think you're talking about
Uncle Tom.
Oh, the Uncle Tom movie. Yes, yes, yes. Uncle Tom 2. How was that?
Uncle Tom 2 is riveting.
Really? Those who don't know Uncle Tom 2, explain what Uncle Tom 2, because Larry Elder is behind the movie, I believe one of the financiers of the movie,
yes,
and it talks about Democrats and their history of racism in America. Go ahead.
I had to watch it twice, and then I put it on streaming and put it in my pocket because I have a lot of work to do,
wow.
So I was listening to it a third time.
Uh-huh.
It's riveting because it connects all the dots about what the Democrats have done black people.
Mm-hmm.
And the spear, the tip of the spear, has been racist division for everything. These people are communists. These people are communist.
Yeah.
Marxist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter, all of them. All of that is geared towards dividing this country.
Yeah.
And now they have a new group, transgenderism.
Yes.
What are they doing with castrating kids? How do you
castrate? Yeah. It's madness. Barbara, it's madness.
On 12-year-olds and 10-year-olds. Yeah.
It's madness. It's madness. Now, Barbara, when I met you, and I've had this analogy that I made for years, and that is the Democrat Party uses people of color for elections. They say they're going to turn things around. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. They're going to give you this. We're going to give you that. We're going to give you a check. We're going to give you a phone. All of this. And then the day after the election, what do they do, Barbara? With the day after the election, what do Democrats do to people of color?
All they do is leave a little check on the table and they go away.
That's right. They leave money on the dresser, and they get up and leave. So you're saying this movie, Uncle Tom, too.
But you know what? It goes beyond that.
Okay.
Because what they have done with the legacy of what they have done in the school system, with the indoctrination, that has to be stopped. And I have to give this Tuesday. Actually, it's a couple of days from now. The Republican Women of Baltimore is going to have an event about that. Just say no to indoctrination. Parents, you have got to get involved about your children. It doesn't matter what color they are. Children love each other. They go to school together.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter about the race.
Yeah.
Because I tell you, if we don't stop this right now, and Westmore is a Marxist. I just pray to God every day for Cox, for Dan Cox.
Yeah. Now you're talking
every
about
time,
the
every time he's attacked.
Yeah.
Every time he's attacked, I want a counterattack. But I'm a New Yorker and I'm from Queens. I'm from Queens. I'm from Trump Town, baby. That's what we do. We don't take it laying down. You know, when somebody hits you, you got to hit back harder.
Well, Barbara, listen, we got to run. We got to run.
Turning the other cheek is not going to work with these guys.
All right, listen, Barbara, I got to run. Thanks for calling this morning. I want to check out that movie. Then we will regroup later in the week because one of the big things that I took from this weekend is this racism in America lie is just that. My generation was the first truly colored blind generation, and we were never racist. It's BS. It's all been BS. The only racists are Democrats. Let's take a break. You are listening to The Rob Carson Show. It is The Rob Carson Show, Monday edition. Hope you had a good weekend. I had a good weekend. I got an on-air light for my home studio. I was very proud of it. It was the first time that I've gone by an on-air light into a studio that wasn't owned by a large corporate concern. So I plugged it in. It's in the hall, a big on-air light. My wife came home, and she looked at it. And she goes, "That's a little bright, isn't it?" I'm like, "Oh, all right, yeah, sure, okay." But anyway, I got a new on-air light. Oh, and I gave in. I gave in this weekend to the pumpkin spice thing, you know, because pumpkin spice is always a big deal. I walked into Trader Joe's on Friday, and the scent of pumpkin spice was so overwhelming. It's like, you ever been on an elevator with somebody who wear way too much cologne or perfume, and you're just like, oh my God, and they get off, and you could still, you know, it was like that going in there. But I gave in this weekend, and I did some cooking. I made pumpkin muffins this week. Yeah, this is what a nationally syndicated talk show host does on the weekends. I made pumpkin muffins. That's what I did. And I made lox. I haven't made lox in a while. And my kids now have a new favorite thing. They want to eat lox on everything because, you know, it's actually pretty easy to do. I've got about 100 cooking videos on the web. If you want to see them, I'll post them on social media. You know, I like to say we'll disagree on politics. We won't disagree on ribs unless you're a vegan. And if that's the case, you have an eating disorder, which makes vegans mad, but I don't care. So, you know, we did watch a good deal of the footage this weekend with regard to the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. I watched a little bit of it. you know, it is certainly a gigantic historical event because the people of Great Britain have had her as the queen for, you know, as long as almost all of us have been alive, essentially. And it was pretty riveting. Apparently, Jake Tapper made a lot of people mad on the left when he said that Joe Biden should invite President Trump to the funeral, although he wouldn't need an invitation from the president, right? I don't think so. Anyway, they were passing aspersions on the possibility that Donald Trump, who was the president of the United States, and a very good president, by the way, would attend the funeral of a world leader who was the Queen of England when he was the president of the United States. And so here is the exchange that Jake Tapper said, of course he should go to the funeral, and the left has gone bananas.
That there's something that is just like fascinating me, which is the notion that it's going to be basically left up to President Biden as to whether or not he brings other presidents with him to the Queen's funeral.
Oh, okay. So I guess it is up to Biden.
I mean, the UK has made it very clear that's up to the president. He's invited, and he can bring whatever delegation. So, obviously, Obama, you know, Carter.
For a wedding, Donald Trump would just crash it. You probably don't want to do it to a funeral, though.
Bush, no-brainers. What about Trump? Will he invite?
Wait a minute. Hold on. Listen to this.
President, he's invited, and he can bring whatever delegation. So, obviously, Obama, you know, Carter, Bush, no-brainers.
Oh, those are all no-brainers to invite them, but Trump.
What about Trump? Will he invite Trump?
We'll see. I mean, that is a difficult question of protocol of diplomacy, but I am told.
No. It's history, actually. And this president should be able to put aside those differences so that a former president could visit the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II.
By a couple of diplomatic officials that, Buckingham Palace is leaving it up to every country individually. I mean, imagine the nightmare of trying to be former presidents and former, you know, defense ministers. But in this case, it would be an easy solution if Trump wasn't in the picture. We'll see what they do. I mean, President Obama, when he was in office, he invited President Bush, President Clinton, President Carter to go with him to Nelson Mandela's funeral as part of the delegation. So there is protocol for having U.S. presidents invite
others. But I doubt President Biden will have the decency to do something like this. And if I were Donald Trump, I'd say, you know what, who cares? If you're up to it, I don't really care. But here's what people online said. They said, what the actual F is going on with Jake Tapper? Hey, Jake Tapper, not sure you're aware, but this, the last president tried to overthrow our government as being investigated for espionage for stealing national security secrets to his retirement home. Hey, actually, it's his home. He's got several homes, and he had this before, and he's not retired yet because he's probably going to be the president in 2 years, if not sooner. So there you go. But that's the tasteless, tactless nonsense you expect from the left in times like this. And I'm assuming it probably went off Donald Trump's back like water off a duck's back, to be quite honest, because it's nonsense. This is kind of interesting with regard to the COVID vaccine. Have you noticed on television there are a lot of PSAs still running for booster shots? Are you motivated by these? I don't know anybody who's been motivated. I've got my two kids. They each had a vaccine. I didn't want them to have a vaccine, but they decided. My daughter was not old enough to make her own decision. She was 16. She opted for it. Her mother was in favor. I said, well, it's your decision. But I did not get the vaccine, nor do I plan on getting the vaccine, by the way. But according to a report from Axios, Goldman Sachs announced last week that last month, no employee except for those working in New York City will be subject to a vaccine as a precondition of their continued or future employment. I thought that was kind of interesting because last year, getting the virus was surely a death sentence. International sports and footwear giant Adidas, based in Germany, dropped its vaccine mandate. That's kind of interesting, right? Adidas followed in the footsteps of Starbucks and Intel, which had both already abandoned their vaccine mandates. Cisco and JP Morgan Chase also changed their vaccine mandate policies this summer. Has the military. Kind of interesting, wouldn't you say? This is Corinne Jean-Pierre on Friday talking about the newest round of vaccines, which, by the way, no other vaccine in U.S. history has required so many boosters and whatnot. And I think most people are saying nonsense, but here is KJP.
you. You've been referring to this new shot as the updated COVID-19 vaccine. Can you explain a little bit more the decision to no longer be calling it just a booster?
Well, we have to remember, we haven't seen a new vaccine since December 2020. Our health and medical experts made an independent determination that we now have new updated vaccine, as you just said, to fight COVID. It is.
Are you buying any of this? Is anybody buying any of this? If you've had one or two boosters, are you saying you really need another booster?
First time that we have seen this type of updated vaccine, like I said, since December of 2020. And the message to folks that we are providing is, if you're 12 or older and it's been at least 2 months since you last got a shot, you should get.
Wait a minute. If it's been 2 months since you had your last shot, they're telling you that if you haven't had a shot in 2 months, you need another shot.
These new updated vaccines right away. That's the doctor's advice. And
which doctor? I want to know which doctor. That's funny.
Made this decision independently.
Yeah. Who's buying it? Honestly, who's buying it at this point? And what are they trying to do at this point? Other than, you know, enrich Big Pharma, I guess. I did see this kind of interesting survey over the weekend, and this is a concern that I've had. I'm not a vaccine conspiracy theorist. Although I've always been from the very beginning of this pandemic, you've got to protect those who are vulnerable, those older people, people who are immune compromised, people we discovered who are overweight or have diabetes, as maybe flu would infect those people in a much worse possible way, then certainly you'd need to consider COVID to be something that would be very dangerous to people who already have pre-existing conditions. But I want you to listen to this. 1,100 athletes died from sudden death from the years 1966 to 2004. All right, I'm just going to lay this out here. I'm not trying to make a judgment here about whether you got the vaccine or not. That's your business. Am I concerned about my kids getting the vaccine? Oh hell yes. 100% I'm concerned about my kids who got the vaccine. And it isn't because I think they're going to get COVID. I just hope and pray that the vaccine hasn't caused anything else. But 1,100 athletes died suddenly between 1966 and 2004. Since January of 2021, 671 have died. Okay? 673 died over the 16-month period since COVID vaccines had been introduced. Okay? 18-year-old high school athlete, 24-year-old Irish soccer player, 27-year-old doctor and triathlete. In the medical journal, I believe this is Lancet, entitled Sudden Cardiac Death in Athletes, the Lausanne recommendations from 1966 to 2004, sudden cardiac death occurred in 1,101 reported cases in athletes under 35. Those people had congenital heart disease, cardiomyopathies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But since 2021, athlete deaths have risen dramatically. Here's the most recent. Senior football player, Rahe High School in New Jersey, 17-year-old. Ali Muhammad, found dead by his father, did not wake up for school. We know that there was a world champion cyclist, Reb Wardell. This just happened a few weeks ago in Scotland. He was crowned Scotland's mountain bike champion, and he died of heart failure at age 37. August 24th, suffered cardiac arrest while lying in bed with his partner. 24-year-old hockey player, forced to retire due to sudden heart inflammation, among other things. That's happened. Kind of interesting. 21-year-old college football player in Arkansas died suddenly after collapsing. This is a senior defensive lineman from Ouachita Baptist University, OBU. 21 years old, died last Sunday after a sudden collapse. Am I concerned about those who've been vaccinated? Sure. Do I believe we need to find out more before we make official judgments about it? Absolutely. Is questioning the vaccine disinformation? Absolutely not. But it's worth bringing up. Now, coming up, I do want to share what's going on with the Boy Scouts in America, what's happening with our schools and pedophilia. Also, we live in a country that is so not racist, people have to make up incidences of racism. Another one, we'll talk about that coming up after the break. You are listening to The Rob Carson Show.
If you're down with trigger warnings, you might want to listen to something else. It's the Rob Carson Show.
You're talking about the vaccine and how many young athletes are dying. And honestly, you know, and for a while there, we couldn't even question that because, you know, what the government wants to censor, it calls disinformation or misinformation. The government actually set up this site called the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And to date, 31,482 people have died after receiving the COVID vaccine. Now, you know, we've got a lot to learn about this, certainly. But realize that when, like, for instance, a few weeks ago, the CDC said that they made a lot of mistakes and expected us to kind of just let that go, right? Like no big deal. But now evidence is coming out. I'll have more on this tomorrow. There's more evidence coming out that the CDC inflated the number of COVID deaths by about 88 to 94% to cause panic, lockdowns, and masking. And like I said, this all started in 2020, and I said 2020 happened because it was 2020. I'll have more on this. But all the truth is going to come out about misinformation and disinformation. Just realize anything that's been called misinformation and disinformation in the last 2 years was probably true. Just, you know, if you're looking for an easy way, oh, yeah, the government said Hunter Biden's laptop, disinformation. Yeah, probably true. Donald Trump didn't work with Russia to throw the election. They called Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton disinformation. It was disinformation to say that Donald Trump didn't collude with Russia. We found that was a lie. So it's going to happen. Last Thursday, Delaware Judge Lori Silverstein approved the Boy Scouts of America $2.46 billion reorganization plan to compensate individuals who say organization leaders sexually abuse them as children. I'm assuming that many of these claimants are probably my age. Boy Scouts of America filed for bankruptcy protection in February. Did you realize that 80,000 men filed claims against the BSA alleging they had been abused as children by the organization's leaders and volunteers? We've got a what appears to be an epidemic of pedophilia, the sexualization of children has been going on for decades in our country. One of the main platforms of my, the planks of my platform as a broadcaster are the protection of children from child abuse, protection of women against spousal abuse, fostering and adopting and all of these things. It's always been very strong in my life, but there are evil forces, I think, in the country, in the world, that are attempting to sexualize our children. It looks like the Boy Scouts of America. Generally, if 80,000 people have filed claims of sexual allegations, then something fundamentally is wrong with the organization. I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of people who are in Boy Scouts. I know a lot of troop leaders and scouts who are very proud members of the Boy Scouts. And I guess I don't understand how something like this could have happened, to be quite honest. A little bit of sanity. The Boise Pride Festival has lost its at least one sponsor over inclusion of its drag kids show featuring kids as young as 11 years old. Here's a little bit from the news story last week where the Pride show, which makes you kind of wonder what some members of the LGBTQ, people are, what they're proud of.
They are, of course, on top of it and doing everything they can. But we talked with the executive director.
The levels were a little low. Let me just say it. Apparently, they have decided to cancel the child performers because of increased safety concerns. Now, that's from the people who put in charge the event, but that's not really the case. You see, the people who found out about it realized this was profoundly wrong, and so sponsors are going, we were really wrong. The people who put together this insanity, including a child's drag show, are citing increased safety concerns because they want to do passively aggressive, blame it on the other side for saying, hey, stop sexualizing children. While the vast majority of sponsors and supporters have voiced their support for the Boise Pride Festival and Drag Kids program, they have decided it's very difficult, but they have decided to postpone the performance due to safety concerns. The kids who are going to perform have the enthusiastic support of their community and support and consent of their parents. That's from the organization. Here's what the sponsors said. Zions Bank said in a statement posted late last week, when we committed to our sponsorship of this year's Boise Pride event, we were unaware of the event's activities involving children and minors. Since learning these specific activities, we made the decision to withdraw our participation in this year's Boise Pride event. Doesn't sound like a hate coming from conservatives. It sounds like they just went, we had no idea you were going to do this crap. The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare also bowed out of its support for the festival. They said, the spokesperson said, DHW sponsorship, the Boise Pride in 2022 has led to some confusion about whether DHW endorses specific event activities involving minors during the event. And they withdraw both its orange level sponsorship and will no longer be supporting a booth at the events this weekend. So apparently there's been a little bit of backlash, and it appears that, like with so many of these things, when the light of day comes to it and we realize what's happening, people say not only no, but hell no. Let's take a break, come back, wrap things up on this Monday. You are listening to The Rob Carson Show. By the way, BYU has conducted an investigation looking into allegations made by a Duke volleyball player, Rachel Richardson. She said that a fan was hurling racial slurs at her during a match on August the 26th, said that somebody was screaming the N-word at her, and they looked into it. Of course, they immediately went after a guy who supposedly said the thing. Here's the deal. Nobody would say that in a crowd, and if they did, they would have been removed. It was all based on nonsense, and this woman's godmother apparently has a history of racism. So racism is a line, is a bunch of BS. Time for me to go, guys. Have a glorious day. God bless you and your family. We'll be back again tomorrow. In the meantime, whatever you do, don't catch the stupid. See ya tomorrow. Bye.